Good everyone. Welcome to NABBA. Welcome to an evening of AA history and a walking tour of the archives here for Zone 13G right here at NABBA. Welcome everybody. It's good to see everyone. Glad you could come out. We're really looking forward to a wonderful evening. So, my name is Chris Ward. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Chris.
I am also your archive chair for Zone 13G. It's an honor and a privilege to host this evening tonight, and it's an honor and a privilege to be of service to NABBA and to Alcoholics Anonymous. So, what's going to happen this evening is, starting here in a few minutes, we're going to have a walking tour of the archives. The evening will be facilitated by our friend Gary Neidhart. Many of y'all know Gary. For those who don't, Gary is what I like to call my history sponsor. He's a well-versed historian in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you need to know anything about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, Gary's your guy. But I'm telling you right now, you better be ready to sit down for about 10 or 15 minutes. See, some of y'all have spoken with Gary before, I see. He's also the former state archive chair for Area 16, the state of Georgia. He just rolled out of that, was it last year or the year before?
Ended in 2017.
So we're very fortunate to have him with us this evening. And I'd like to also thank Tim Ridgway. Where are you, Tim? Thank you, Tim, for letting us hijack your 8 o'clock meeting tonight. It's wonderful. Thank you. Everybody give a round of applause for Tim. And what a wonderful speaker meeting he puts on here every Monday at 8 p.m. So what's going to happen? Like I said, we're going to do a walking tour of the archives, starting here in a few minutes until about 7:45 or whenever that ends. And then we're going to take a short break, and then at 8 p.m., we're going to have a PowerPoint presentation right up here on the screen. Gary's going to take us through some early Atlanta AA history, focusing on the pre-traditions era of our fellowship. There's some interesting stories and things about how things were done before the traditions were established. And thank God they were. Because I don't think we'd be here tonight if they were not. I think we may have gone the way of the Washingtonians and disappeared. And I got one word for that, as I know God. Amen. Thank God. So I'm looking forward to a wonderful evening. We're going to do that. And then when we come back up, we're going to do the preamble and the serenity prayer. Tim's going to come up and do that for us at 8 o'clock. So with that, I will give you Gary Neidhart.
All right. My name is Gary. I'm an alcoholic.
Gary.
Now, those of you that wish, you've got your seats, put something that marks your seat so you can come back to them. I'd make that as a recommendation. When we go out to the front room, on the bench to the lower left, there is a 4-page guide. The intent of the guide is that when you might come here on your own sometime in the future, as you can walk yourself through the archives tour that I'm going to do yourself. Okay? And the idea is that we have a lot of valuable things that are in these display cabinets that a lot of people have never known what is actually on display or what it has to do with Atlanta AA history. And this is going to be a guide that you can give to yourself again. So those that will just reassemble in the front room. I'm really very honored and pleased that this many people will show up. We'll try to do as best we can with the crowd that we have. Thank you.
Again, quickly, round of applause for Gary on that walking tour. Wonderful. Okay, at this time, I'm going to bring Tim up, and we're going to do the preamble and the serenity prayer to get this thing started. And then after that, we're going to pass the baskets to cover the cost of this deal. As many of y'all know, we don't have any dues or fees, but we certainly have expenses and baskets to put them in. So with that, I'll bring Tim up.
Thank you, Chris. I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting. Tonight we don't have a speaker, but he has spoken here several times, and hopefully he's going to live long enough to come and tell a story once again. Before we say the Serenity Prayer,
well, that's the optimist. I never know.
Before we say the Serenity Prayer together, let's share a moment of silence while thinking about why we're all here. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve the common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help others to achieve sobriety. We've got no dues or fees, but we've got baskets, like Chris said. We're going to pass the baskets and move forward and get to the main part of the program. Thank you.
Again, it's wonderful to see everybody here. It's great to see some young people here tonight, too. How cool is that?
Yeah.
Some young people interested in how this thing got started. What a wonderful thing this is. I saw Helen come in a few minutes ago. Where are you hiding, Helen? Where is she? There she is. Woo! For those of you who don't know, Helen has been running that central office down there for a long time now. And Avery's just been waiting in the wings to take over here. And she's probably wondering, oh my God, I didn't know I was going to be the assistant this long. So it's good to see some fellow AA historians here. And we are really looking forward to a wonderful evening of how this thing got started here in Atlanta. And what a blessing it's been that a guy like me, on August 13th of 2006, beaten, crushed, and defeated, had a place to come. A guy like me, who didn't want anything to do with God, who didn't want anything to do with any of his kids, was ready to end it all, came to a place where I could find grace and be blessed and reborn and have new life. Amen. What a wonderful thing this is. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and give it over to Gary, and we are going to get moving. So welcome, Gary. Thank you so much.
Hi, everybody. I'm Gary. I'm an alcoholic. It is an honor to address you all. I am so pleased at the turnout. It's humbling. And I'm really, and there's so many friends here. What an evening this is for me. Thank you so much. As we go through the slides, there's only one way that I know how to do this, and that is there's so much material here that if I manually tried to explain this, like I was doing even through the archives walkthrough, I would get stuck and you'd be here for 2 hours. Okay? So actually what I've done is I've timed this and the slides are going to self-advance. So we're guaranteed that we won't get stuck. And I'm going to try to talk as fast as I can, but I may not be able to keep up, okay? But also, a theme of this in general is look for how much we need traditions, but look also at both the positives and the negatives when what we're doing always ends up in the newspaper. Sometimes that can be very nice. Sometimes it isn't very nice, especially when certain people don't know what they're talking about but do have an opinion about us. Okay, now with that, I've got to do one thing. There we go. Now that's the first slide, and you'll see that is Bill, as I explained to you a part of this during the walkthrough. That's a picture of Bill and Lois on the Harley. She drove the Harley too. And this is when they drove by Stone Mountain on January 26, 1926. I like taking pigeons there and walking on that same road. And, of course, when they went from Vermont all the way down to Fort Myers and then back up to Dayton, Tennessee, where Lois was driving, and they crash. And as I said out in the walkthrough, that picture of Bill Wilson being ejected from the sidecar, flying over the top of Lois and breaking his collarbone. That is that's put the end of their Harley days, and they took the train home. But it's quite an adventure that they had. I can't imagine going from Vermont all the way down to Fort Myers in the equivalent of dirt roads. They got stuck three times when they were in Georgia in the red mud. I mean, plus they were camping, and plus it was January when they came through. I mean, they were doing this in the winter. I don't even know where anybody would get the gasoline to at that time. But again, that was January 26, 1926. This is our sobriety tree. Bill Wilson, you'll see on the left, and John Fitzhugh Mayo of Washington, D.C., with a sobriety date of October 1935 on the right. He is the composer of the story, Our Southern Friend. This is actually the first newspaper article that I could find. There might be one earlier, but it is a columnist, Louis Newton, and a major, R.J. Gwynn, and they, I believe, have taken a look at the Liberty magazine article published on September 30th, which caused him to order a big book, and this is a very positive review, and much of the text is direct quotes from the big book, including to the lower right, you can see the steps. Now, this is the first AA meeting that happened to be in Atlanta. It's actually October 29th of 1940. It's credited by Bill Wilson to be started by Irwin Meyerson of Cleveland, Ohio, a champion salesman of Venetian blinds who worked anywhere from D.C. all the way out to Mississippi. But as it so turns out, there was a Marion H. here. Marion H. was at the first meeting. Unfortunately, he ended up getting drunk, and there was nobody sober by April of 1941. He was reported, that founder was reported doing 60 days in jail. And so the meeting, while they did have a meeting here, it obviously did not stick. Marion H., and then also, now, this is, on the left is a book by, called The Pulpit and the Bottle. It was written by Ann Daughtry. She's out in Oregon now. She is writing about her grandfather, co-founder Reverend Sam Daughtry. You can see in bold, he was recommended by his doctor to have a milk punch made with a glass of whole milk, an egg, a little sugar, cracked ice, and about an ounce and a half of whiskey and rum. To make a long story short, he forgot all about the rest and just did whiskey and rum. Okay, and this is a fellow who never had any alcohol at all at the age of 34. He was a minister up in Brooklyn. He ended up losing his job because he was drunk on the job. He came down here to Atlanta, ended up doing very well, had his 5:30 service on Sunday, was in the radio, and that worked very well until he showed up drunk on the job and got fired. He went all over the place, all over the country, being a janitor, being anything, getting fired from them all. In September, this is a story of a wife standing behind her man. His wife brought it, the Alcoholics and God, but he couldn't find any AA people to help him stay sober. He ended up getting drunk again. He came to Atlanta. He placed an ad in the paper. I should be dead, he says. On December 3rd, a fellow, Morgan Blake, who plays a big part in this, vouched for Sam in an editorial. Unfortunately, Sam got drunk again. He ended up selling tires. He lost that. Sam's wife brought a March 1 Saturday Evening Post to Sam's attention. Then Sam's youngest son was killed in a car accident in California. Between that tragedy and getting a big book, he was sober by April 16th of 1941.
And this is co-founder Steve M. This is from the Washington, D.C. archives, described M as being one of the boys of 39. He was a sponsee of John Fitch U. Mayo. That's our southern friend. This corrects the AA comes of age, that we actually are we come from Washington, D.C., then New York, and not Cleveland. On May 25th, 1941, Louise M., another wife, wrote the New York headquarters announcing that they had moved to Atlanta. Louise was requiring if they had moved there, and as soon as out, no, they had not. And you can see in the lower right is Steve M., that is information directly from Washington, D.C., AA, Steve M. This is the article that was placed in the Atlanta Constitution on July 8th. Not an ad, it was actually an article. And Reverend Sam said it was a little story in the Atlanta Constitution that led me to Steve. This is where they ended up meeting. This is what Steve knew about Alcoholics Anonymous when he had moved from Washington, D.C. down to Atlanta. Again, this is the first continuous AA meeting. According to the July 15th, 1941 letter, seven people were present: Steve M., Reverend Sam D., and Ernest S., Ernest Scruggs. No, I don't think he played the banjo, but that's whatever. Earl Scruggs, but that we know almost very little about him. They met in Buckhead. The AA group grew under various names: the Downtown Group, the Midtown Group, the Wilson Club of AA. This is a letter that is written from Atlanta up to New York, and it says, "Beyond a shadow of a doubt, we have some of the finest group of ex-drunks in the United States." Last Tuesday evening, July 8, 40 people were at the meeting at Parlos of AB in the Robert Fulton Hotel, our regular meeting place. It's and you can see the signatures. Sam Daughtry is there, and also Ernest Scruggs is there as well. Now, the first paragraph here is more about Sam Daughtry. This is from Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age, written by Bill Wilson. And he talks about the Chautauqua brand of AA, which Sam, as a minister, ran. And when I looked up Chautauqua, I said, think of it as a non-denominational Christianity, similar to the Oxford group. Sam founded the Church of the Open Door in October of 41. That was a big deal after 8 years of not being a minister. Services were held at the Rialto Theater, but the church folded because basically his congregation went to war. Sam ended up moving up to Rome, Georgia. He became quite a circuit speaker. You can hear him on www.recoveryspeakers.com. He died of a heart attack in 1956. But I highly recommend, he is very entertaining. He spoke at the same program in which Bill Wilson talked about how the Big Book was put together, celebrating the sobriety of Bill Wilson's sponsor, Abby Thatcher. So now this happens to be the first known locally created feature article on Alcoholics Anonymous. The fellow to the right, they made that clear, is an actor. Okay. But start to look at this. You know, nobody has any time. Nobody has any time. So immediately what they're doing, judges and ministers end up talking, not members of AA. Columnist Morgan Blake, this was part of his editorial. He says, "I know a lot of drink addicts have been working. I've been working with myself, and he is very pro AA. And the reason that he's pro AA is this is a fellow who got sober in 1923 through his church. And there's somebody that he was working with for 20 years who got sober in AA." And that got Morgan Blake's attention. Morgan Blake turns out to be a real champion in the Atlanta Journal of Alcoholics Anonymous, even though himself he never did become a member. And he talks about there's no magic. He says you can tell those people anything because they've heard it all. You know, you can't fool them. And so from the start, though, Morgan Blake is very, very positive on Alcoholics Anonymous and the results that he did. This is our first
Clubhouse, 57 and a half Broad Street. This is right out of the Atlanta Central Office history, the documents that we had meetings on Tuesdays, open meetings on Friday. The clubhouse was open 7 days a week. There were various entertainment and social affairs. The clubhouse was dedicated June 12th of 1942, and she told Neely Daniels said that actually the place was provided rent-free as a result of Asa Candler, and that is Coca-Cola. But that we were in this clubhouse until 1946. This is a favorite of mine. I also kind of gave away the punchline as far as I'm concerned. This is Bill Wilson's first visit, Alcoholics Anonymous Chief. If you look down at the bottom there, Alcoholics Anonymous, underneath Bill's picture, doesn't get drunk anymore. Doesn't say that he stopped drinking. He just doesn't get drunk anymore. Is he? Okay, but again, when people are writing about us, you don't know necessarily what you're going to get. Okay? When I stopped by the GSO in this time period, I was looking at a number of scrapbooks that are up in New York, and his picture's all over the place. I mean, part of he violated as much anonymity to begin with, to start with, as anybody. Now, this is from the article, the founding father, not Coke, the founding father, that strange organization of former drunks. And you know, and he's quoting himself as one of the world's worst drunkards. Okay, I'm not going to fight with that. And the very conception of Alcoholics Anonymous was something similar to the DTs the founding father revealed here with a smile. But one can conclude that Bill Wilson at this time was about as anonymous as Clark Gable. Here is this thank you note, which is just glowing. This is so wonderfully, this to me is the essence of Bill. The memories of it, his visit, will always remain. I wish I could find words to tell you how inspired I was by what I saw and heard and felt in Atlanta. Please also give my regards and thanks to Morgan Blake, who was never an AA member in the Atlanta Journal, who has done so much to make the group his success. Seldom has a group had a better start than yours. It's just the nature of Bill and how he would give a just glowing response to. And of course, this was just one of the places that he visited. He was touring around in the early 40s. Now this is the downtown group sending a letter up, and this is just one of those things when I've talked to any African American, they tell me, tell it like it was, Gary. And there, if you go halfway down here, you'll see there is a difference of opinion of this group as to whether or not Negroes fail be permitted to attend the meetings of the Atlanta group. The end result is they wish to more or less train people, blacks, to have their own meetings. It's something that doesn't actually happen until 1951. They were, in other words, so African Americans were interested in AA, but due to the times, they were not able to attend meetings in Atlanta until in 1951. A glaring need for the traditions. Obviously, this is obviously 7 years before the traditions. A significant 12-step call. This is when Reverend Sam D. calls on Neely Daniels. Neely D., she stayed sober as long for 7 months, but she went back out. She got sober for good on July 4th of 1945. She was the first Georgia AA delegate to attend the AA conference in New York. But here is where you have too many cooks spoil the porridge. And fumes of alcohol enter the brain and theorize this opening is abnormally large in alcoholics. Okay? And then he starts talking about disease, alcoholism being a disease, and he does us no good whatsoever to compare our disease to syphilis. Okay. But again, when we throw it open to people that don't know anything about us, this is what you get. Here we have a doctor who is just learned about AA, but he's ready to give us medical advice. Okay, and he figures out where we are. He has a tonic par excellence for the inebriate or the dipsomaniac. In my opinion, he's really to give us essential vitamins B complex and D. He doesn't mean he may have never met us before, but he knows what kind of medicine that we would need to get sober. This, and incidentally, this is just a very brief summary. Now, this is also typically, again, in a time when no one has any time in the program whatsoever, they get a doctor and they get a minister to come and speak at the meetings and note how it's in the paper. Okay, and, you know, the Dr. Robert Burns was a fellow that helped Reverend Sam D. be reordained and become a member of the Presbyterian Church once again and regain his credentials. But this is, again, very typical. Here we have the superintendent of the Milledgeville State House School for the Insane. We don't call anything like that anymore. But he comes and stands in front of us as a doctor and sees all these sober people and he says, "I don't have a clue how you did it." Now, here's your doctor running a place where we are in force. And he's saying he doesn't know how to help any of us. But this is pretty much typical of the times in that we just baffled this doctor speaker. He says, "You know more about this question than I do. Regardless of how you are winning your fight, that's all how anyone can ask." And that's where we had for his help. Now, this is the second Atlanta AA visit of Bill Wilson, May 28th of 1944. This is the first of three articles announcing he's coming to town. Uncle Bill, okay? And he, now notice, he will address a group of Atlanta ministers, physicians, and businessmen at a luncheon. He will speak at a dinner. At least he mentions for AA members. But in many regards, when you start looking at these advertisements, you would hardly know that there were any drunks there, all right? Because there are so many people of prominence that end up attending these meetings. And, of course, again, everything that we're doing is announced in the paper, so who knows who else might be showing up as well. And again, this is a meeting at the AA Club Room at 57.5 Broad Street. This is more the members of the Wilson Club of AA. That's how anonymous he was. Okay, you know, but look at you opening a full schedule at 9:30 a.m. He holds a conference at the federal penitentiary here. And that was followed by a luncheon with 100 Atlanta ministers, physicians, business executives, and various government officials are scheduled to attend. All right, and then you have, here's the quote, AA is a combination of religion and applied psychology that any alcoholic with a genuine desire to reform can take advantage of. You can take that or leave it. But that, again, is people soliciting their opinion towards what they think we are. And again, this Uncle Bill routine I find to be rather rather humorous. Okay, there's more of these on the way. Okay, and now this is again Alcoholics Anonymous founder Uncle Bill coming here today, and again founder who refers to remain anonymous, and then they give their schedule of every place he's going to be. Okay, and he will appear at the organization called blah blah blah, and you know they have him booked. I mean they really expect a whole lot out of him. But again, these are three different articles, and he has not even come to town yet. But the amount of publicity, and again, behind the scenes, the amount of potential ego that this might feed, being a big shot, it would be hard to resist. Now, here's when he speaks. You might remember bankrupt idealists being out of Tradition 6 in the 12 and 12, but here he's using the term in 1944, defining us as a bankrupt bankrupt idealist, and he labels himself as an interesting technique that has been dry for 10 years, But I don't get, you know, antique, he's 49 years old. He's not that much of an antique. You know, and at least he does mention Dr. Bob here, and he mentions 12,000 defeated drunks now being members of the fellowship. He does have trouble with numbers. Elsewhere, it's 8,000. Okay, but here he goes with the second half of the defines alcoholic as a bankrupt idealist. He did pay an informal visit to the federal penitentiary to get volunteers coming in. Bill described yesterday's luncheon as the biggest turnout since the dinner Rockefeller once gave. Wow. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that's nevertheless, that's again what he said. Here's a heartwarming one. Bill brings tears to the eyes of the listeners here. This is the kind of glowing kind of information that was publicized about him. And Bill is saying, right now, he declared, I believe AA is the fastest growing organization in the country. This is World War II. I think it would be the U.S. Army myself. But, you know, but again, the Atlanta chapter of AA, known as the Wilson Club, has an ever-increasing membership and includes some of the city's leading businessmen. Okay? And yes, it did. Because many of our prominent businessmen were in need of this fellowship. But again, this is still in the period when we only have one AA meeting in Atlanta. And again, we have, moving on, ex-drugs aid war effort. Now, here's again where he has troubles with numbers. You'll see in this is that he claims that the 8,000 ex-drunks are in the war industries, that over 1,000 AA members are in the armed forces. I've been to a presentation in Sedona in which they said the number was 300. Okay, but Bill has a way of, you know, but then he comes up with something I have no clue about whatsoever. And the earning power of the 8,000 drunks is $30 million. Who knows? How in the world did he ever come up with that? I don't have a clue. But this is the kind of thing that you get when Bill is playing the role of a promoter and encouraging people that and plugging that here we have a solution. And mind you, he is here talking to the Kiwanis Club. And he's going around and now here's Morgan Blake writes an op-ed after Bill Wilson leaves town. And this is just, few indeed are the public speakers these days who can hold the attention of an audience for more than 30 minutes. At the end of that period, many listeners find they have something else to do, basically. But Monday, I heard a man deliver two addresses. Both occasions, audiences were intensely interested. Mayor Hartsfield was there. And in my long career as a newspaperman, I have naturally encountered he's one of the most amazing young men. I don't get that. He's 49 years old. That I've ever run into. He may be selected to play. He may not be selected opposite Rita Hayworth. He is long in league. Bill along the lines of Ichabod Crane. He looks as though he's a country boy. Just came to town. Bill would never be mistaken from Apollo. But my heavens, who's ever been in this room ever been mentioned or compared to Apollo, for crying out loud? Okay. But again, this is more. This is from the same article. When Bill gets up to speak, the magnetism of the man immediately grips you. He's a grand person, holds you in the hollow of his hand. He's listening to him is as fascinating and adventurous I've ever listened to. He's one of the most tremendous stories I've ever told, experienced in spiritual exaltation in their own lives. Listening to him, it's a great feeling, said Bill, when the dark days come now that I can say, thank God I'm sober. And the final quote is, Bill is a great man with a great message. I don't know if you ever read that, but my heavens. What praise that is. And again, Morgan Blake just being a champion. And here's Bill's thank you note back to Atlantans. We must have heard the voice of Providence, seen a great miracle, and felt like two very small chips. Lois was along too. Happily afloat on that wave of happy destiny which AA has become. We shall say with thought and care, you folks were incomparable
thank you all, everyone. I mean, I find it's a very interesting that he always seemed to make sure that he would follow up these visits with a thank you note. This is a documentation that the Atlanta meeting at the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary is the fifth oldest penitentiary meeting in the country. That would be behind three in California and one in Oregon. This is the a letter that was written from what we call the GSO back to Atlanta that documented the meeting at the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary, unfortunately, which has been temporarily suspended. Now, this is Morgan Blake, and this is the nature of the man that has been given the excessive praise. This is when there was a riot in the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary. They took four guards hostages. There were 25 rioters. And they basically asked for Morgan Blake. He had been taking meetings, church meetings, into the prison. They asked that he hear their grievances, take those grievances, put them in the paper. And that this was national news. He ended up putting an end to the riot himself. And here is the thank you note from the President of the United States, FDR, thanking him, Morgan Blake, for the nature of the effort that he did to put an end to that riot. That is how much prestige, actually, that Morgan Blake had in this community. And this is to get to know him in contrast to eventual events that end up happening with Morgan Blake later in years to come, when the road to hell is paved through good intentions. Now, this is a remarkable meeting at City Prison. He has 16 members of Alcoholics Anonymous who are guests in the city jail, City Prison. And 16 volunteers. They had 16. You know how hard it would be to get 16 volunteers to do anything? Much go, let's go into a prison. Not to mention have 103 prisoners. I've done jail meetings for 18 years. I think the most we've ever been allowed is 45. But they had 103. Here's another article that has 200 inmates at the city stockade. And this is where Dr. Pierce Harris gets involved. The three people facing us are not members of AA, but they are facilitating an AA meeting. But again, these numbers of people that are getting involved in AA events is extraordinary to me, because these numbers are just way outside the bounds of anything that I've been familiar with. This is a visit of Marty Mann, Mrs. Marty Mann, and she was very effective in being called Mrs. Marty Mann in an era in which being gay, being a lesbian, was not allowed. But no one ever charged or dealt with or questioned her with regarding to that. But she was here, and to attempt to get alcoholics all the help they could possibly get by establishing free clinics throughout the country. She wanted these free clinics staffed by psychiatrists, doctors, and social workers. This is, again, April 22nd of 1945. Now, let's party. Look at the what's going on for the AA's fourth anniversary. There's this group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and look at the people. Entertainment by the Atlanta Police Quartet, Minstrel Green Adair, and Bert Flynn. That is an important name. Bert Flynn, remember, former vaudeville stars, Boogie Woogie Piano. They're having a party. Paul Whiteman's orchestra. Holy mackerel. They got followed by 2 hours of music furnished by Albert. These people can party. But here we also have, in 1946, in the beginning, the Adelaide Society, which was founded to act as the physical agent of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's our central office, Helen and Avery. And that's their phone number. Our lease expired on 57 and a half Broad Street. We ended up moving to 70 and a half Auburn Avenue. It's also referred to as
Houston Street in AA literature, but I'm confused because a fire on January 16th, 1946 destroyed the building. AA was located on the second floor, and the fire was said to have started in the AA clubhouse. Some smoker in a wastebasket, probably. Who knows? Now, this is the article, the 20,000 fire raises the building, and this is where I got the address of 70 to 72 Auburn Avenue as being the actual location of the fire. And that Atlan, that is a the way it was spelled in the article. I only can continue that, but that again documents. And they lost everything that was in the clubhouse. So Morgan Blake, recognizing the great work AA was doing, decided to get a permanent meeting place for AA. He offered to head a committee to solicit funds for a new home so we could expand. And some had the visions of the finest AA home in the Southeast, but the pros and cons led to a verbal battle royal, and tempers reached the boiling point. It was decided by a substantial majority to accept his outside offer, but still there were people that that disagreed vehemently. And Arthur Y., the original author of the Atlanta History, attempted to explain this controversy through the use of Tradition 7. However, this is 2 months before the traditions were ever announced in the grapevine. So, but nevertheless, people still thought that we should be self-supporting through our own contributions. And even Blake observed that some AAs did not feel comfortable asking anybody outside the membership for funds. So we had self-supporting through our own contributions as an issue, really, even before the traditions that happened to be here in Atlanta. And people felt very strong like this because, of course, again, we'd lost all the big books. We'd lost the entire inventory of what had been in our central office. And, of course, just anticipating the next slide is as a result, the group split. So Morgan Blake was behind the group, and of course, since we do everything in the paper, you see we've got our central group, which is meeting at Friday at 8 p.m. We got it on the left side, and Alcoholics Anonymous meets in new quarters, and that happens to be on the right side. The central group did not last a long time. It, eventually, it got down to one person and folded. It was the 49.5 North Avenue, Spring Street, that survived. This is an article of Ernest Rogers, again another champion of AA, and he's trying to be very supportive of newcomers, and I think that's why he has an ice pack on his head. If you look at take a look at the picture, but he also says how most alcoholics dissipate their resources and rarely are capable of taking care of themselves when they come into the program. That was me too, but we lose the North Avenue lease. And here we are, we're homeless, in front of everybody, okay? And the eviction order says so, that I know that we've got to go out and look for a, you know, a new location. And because, again, we end up, you know, we were having meetings. But to the rescue, Mayor Hartsfield comes to the rescue and said, he asked for help. Mayor Hartsfield Friday urged Atlantans to rally to the support of Alcoholics Anonymous and help a new location for club rooms and a meeting place. It is, again, amazing when we're that much in the paper. We're just like any other organization, and everybody can have an opinion for about us, and everybody can want to help us, too. All right, and it's just was the nature of the times when we were, again, in the papers so much. The North Avenue group found 117 Hunter Street as a clubhouse where we were for 2 years. But this also begins a period of when additional groups start to be founded. Now, this is a area in which I think can deserve more study. The West End group, I'm not going to say that these six groups that I mentioned are the absolute truth, but it's close. This is another one of Ernest Rogers. In the audience meeting, I attended the night were several old friends, but instead of embarrassment, they exhibited pride in having achieved a victory over themselves. Here's one more way of having a someone give us a very positive information in the paper with a lovely headline of humility being the real secret. Announcing Atlanta's AA 7th anniversary, ad directed to drunkards lost AA, launched AA 7 years ago. We have our three co-founders, Steve, Ernest, and Sam. They come back and they speak here. But again, everything we do happens to be, everything that's significant anyway, happens to be in the paper. And this is actually an anticipate Friday night. And this is actually a report after the meeting has taken place. Conquest over drink Baird at AA anniversary here. And this is Bert Flynn is the fellow that Morgan Blake helped, couldn't get sober. Bert operates now a home for former drunkards. And he claims to have been in the Atlanta City Stockade 105 times. I ask you, how could anybody count that many drunks? I have no idea. But that's what he claimed. Now, here is on our 8th anniversary. The AA Week is planned for Atlanta. So here we are once again. And we have the 117.5 Hunter Street address. And this is our, we've been called a retired drunkard. Okay, you know, we're going to have a birthday binge. Okay, not necessarily the terminology I think would be what we would need, you know. But look, nearly 1,000 self-styled ladies, gentlemen, and drunkards. Okay, but that's 1,000 people. That's 1,000 people in the late 40s, and I swear it's quite an accomplishment to have 1,000 people in Atlanta anywhere today. But this is the amount of enthusiasm that was being shown for AA at that time. This is Bert Flynn, the town drunk. He was too well known to be anonymous, so he said, everybody knows who I am. This is the lighthouse, which was his halfway house on the left, and unfortunately it was his obituary that he happens to be listed on his right. But it's a heartwarming story that that he goes from basically an incurable to hopeless drunk, but AA was again able to reach him, and then he turns around and founds a halfway house for people that are just as hopeless as he was at one time. And so it makes for quite a story. The Hunter Street property became were afraid the place was going to collapse. So they founded the 522 West Peachtree Street. There's a typo in the article that says 530, but it really was 522 West Peachtree Street. And this, at one time, proved to be the finest, largest, and most convenient AA headquarters we were privileged to assemble in. That was in late December of 1949. And again, with an event like this was on a this was actually up on the second floor, which was a typical many of our clubhouses were up on the second floor. Here we have an article where we're having 500 people that are dedicating the new home at 522 West Peachtree Street, and the charter member of Atlanta Group was guest speaker. I would guess that was Reverend Sam, but I do not know that. And they have they expanded by three times as much room. They had an auditorium. I'm just told that I believe that sat as many as 400. Now, this is the Southeast Regional Conference that we skipped in 1951. Last year, in an article is part of the Studying Drinking Rise, it says that last year police arrested 4,263 women. I find that hard to imagine. But that's what it says. And we have AA co-founder, which is the right terminology. And this is a different day and age for sure, because we have the governor of Georgia that is welcoming over 1,200 delegates from around the southeast. This is a different time. I can't imagine a governor of anything getting involved in AA in this day and age. Regardless, it's something that it just seems to be beyond what we do. But nevertheless, that was pretty standard. This is the that should be Southeastern Regional Conference, and this is editorial in the Atlanta Constitution. And may their success be remarkable. And this is the, you know, in the 16 years, this New Yorker and another alcoholic, late Bob S., this is a solid blessing of the Southeastern Conference that was held at the Biltmore Hotel. And again, the year was July 12th, 13th, and 14th. And this, of course, this is a mistake that claimed that Bill Wilson had not been in Georgia before. That's the way the article, but somehow that visit was in 42 and 44 was lost. Here we have Georgia Governor Talmadge declaring the use of narcotics and excessive use of alcohol as the two greatest menaces of the day. He doesn't expect it to follow singleness of purpose, so he talks about drugs at the key of this event as well. But again, this was it was a different time to have. And Bill Wilson could always pull in people like this, outsiders. And during that time period, no one would think twice if Bill Wilson thought it was a good idea. Then that's pretty much what we did. I'm very proud to announce the founders of the first African-American meeting in Atlanta, Buck R., Marcel C., Bill M., and his son founded the first African-American meeting, the 24-hour group, in Atlanta on September 20th, 1951. A second meeting followed in 1953 named Easy Does It with founder John F. John Flemister, date of sobriety of the 23rd of February of 1952. Easy Does It celebrated its 65th anniversary in 2018. John Flemister continued until he died in 1990. Through the process of integration, to hear him talk with Neely Daniels and Joe Phelan and be included in when the history of AA was told by a bunch of old-timers in 1979 is a wonderful experience, because you know where he once was, and now that he's included, this is looking to the future, the interpretation of our 12 steps. On the left, it's a pamphlet that is provided by Detroit to this day. It's very active. You can call them up. You can get a copy. It has this interpretation of our 12 steps. You can see how the steps are grouped. To the right is the equivalent of Atlanta's version, which is no longer provided because, as Helen said, nobody wanted it. But I question... Take a look at it. My Valentine to my wife was directly out of that book, To Tell Her So, which is a wonderful, wonderful, loving verse. That it's this is other groups, local groups, great pamphlets like this. Washington D.C. does, Akron does. They call it the Table Mate. They have the same kind of grouping, but then have different articles at the tail end. This is Arthur Wise, Atlanta History is on the left, which I retyped. This is Atlanta's 1941 to 1974 history on the right. What I've been doing so far, in my opinion, is uncovering and discovering, and it would be something that I hope is a beginning and a momentum builder, so that we can have who was Ernest Scruggs, what did Dean of VOVs do for us, what did Ernest Rogers do. There's any number of questions which, as far as I'm concerned, as we start digging into this, the gifts that were given to us, we have somehow lost some of those gifts, and we need to reclaim the nature of what a gift we've received. And as a conclusion, tradition to, for our group purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. I'm more than happy to make a PDF available to anybody that wants it. All you need to do is remember that email address, which is mine, and I'll gladly send you this, because this is something that I do believe that much of it was forgotten, but the people that went before us that built places like this so somebody like a sick puke like me could show up and be here and be as miserable and sing that song, that I swear it's the theme song of my anyway, nobody knows the trouble I've seen, nobody knows the sorrow. Well, guess what? Those people knew. Those people had the doors open for us. I cannot be more grateful for doing so, and thank you very much for listening.
Amen.
Thank you, Gary. And I mentioned earlier that he is a blue chip speaker, and his story can be found on aabluechipspeakers.org, where you can freely download almost 400 blue chip speakers. Many of those in the room tonight have their stories there. So wanted to let you know that we're trying to carry on the tradition, and if you'd like to participate, let me know. And we'll get you on the schedule. Next week, Marjorie C. from the Fourth Dimension Group in Lawrenceville will be telling her story here at 8 o'clock. Tim?
Thank you, Jim. I'd like to thank everybody. And again, in the theme Gary mentioned at the end, the people that came before us. I heard somebody say earlier, we stand on the shoulders of giants. That is very true. And when I was first getting sober, my first AA home group, I was nervous. I didn't want to be there. What am I getting myself into? These people are crazy. Oh my God. But I had become convinced that on my own, I fail at life. And I had become equally convinced that these people seem to offer a solution to that. And what a miracle when those two things come together. And at the end of the meeting, I remember my sponsor's wife said, here at the Sober is Great group of Alcoholics Anonymous, we stay seated and bow our heads in reverent prayer to those who prayed us into these rooms tonight. And I thought to myself, that's right. And so I'd like to do that tonight. If we could just stay seated and bow our heads in reverent prayer of the giants that prayed us into this room tonight. And if we could do that now. Whose Father? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Got nowhere to hide, an empty hole inside.
everyone's out to get me. Trouble always following me. Feeling like I just can't happen. Demons that are all around me. Take every pill from A to Z.